Well, one of the finest UFO researchers out there, Richard Dolan. And he's next on Coast to Coast AM as we talk about the FBI's new vault, Secrets of UFOs, in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Richard Dolan, UFO researcher. Richard Dolan published a 500-page study, UFOs in the National Security State and Unclassified History, 41 to 73, and then completed Volume 2 of his historical study, The Cover-Up Exposed, 73 to 1991. Richard has discussed the destruction of our political liberties as a result of the UFO cover-up, has speculated on the possible nature of the non-humans themselves, and what their presence here means for all of us. This has led him to take a fresh approach to the topic of exopolitics and to develop unique insights into the practical challenges and opportunities for a full disclosure of the UFO phenomenon. He's just back from Amsterdam, and here he is on Coast to Coast, Richard Dolan. Welcome back, Richard. How are you?
Hi, George. It's a pleasure to be on with you again.
Me too. I'm looking forward to this. So many things are going on, and I want to get into some of your work, too, your After Disclosure book and your most recent one that you wrote with Bryce Abel.
Yeah.
But tell us a little bit about your Amsterdam trip, and then we'll get into this FBI story, which is
incredible. Well, I've been traveling a lot lately. Amsterdam was one of my recent venues. Actually, just came back from Eureka Springs, Arkansas, which was right after Amsterdam. But Amsterdam was wonderful. It was organized by my Dutch friend Jeroen van Straten, which I had mispronounced for the longest time until he graciously and quietly told me how it was actually pronounced. And it was a conference entitled "Secret Space Programs and Breakaway Civilizations," and the breakaway civilizations part was actually, I was very pleased. It was the phrase that I had coined in a couple of my books, some ideas about how the structure of secrecy really might be playing out. And it was a conference about is there or is there not a secret space program and a secret kind of group out there with advanced technology that's involved in all of this. So I was one of the four speakers. Richard Hoagland, who appeared on Coast last night, of course, was there. Peter Lavenda, who has written extensively about the Nazis and the occult, wrote a great book called Unholy Alliance, was there. And UFO researcher and my good friend Tim Good was also there. And also then we had Ed Grimsley, who is very well known for using his high-tech, super cool night vision equipment to look for some bizarre things in the sky. And about 400, 500 people in attendance from the Netherlands, and we had a really interesting day.
Tell me about your recent work with Bryce Abel. I think the world of Bryce, by the way. Now, this is called what, AD After Disclosure, The People's Guide to Life After
Contact? That is exactly right. Well, Bryce is, I'm so lucky that I've had the opportunity to work with this man and to become his friend even more than that. A little over a year ago, about a year and a half ago, Bryce first contacted me. I didn't really know him. He is the creator and the producer of the TV show Dark Skies back in the late 90s, and I'm guaranteed many people listening remember Dark Skies very well. That show, incidentally, is now available, finally, as a full DVD set. But anyway, Bryce called me about a year and a half ago asking what I thought about possibly having my two history books optioned for television treatment, and he was interested in doing that. And I thought, well, that's pretty neat. Let's talk about that. And we had a series of conversations over the winter which kind of morphed. And they morphed into a topic that he and I, we discovered, had a very mutual passion about. And that was the idea of disclosure itself and the end of UFO secrecy and how that might come about and what would happen if it did come about. I had felt for some time that there was, although there was a lot of talk about disclosure, that a lot of it didn't seem very concrete in my own mind, and Bryce shared that view. And we ended up writing a book. We collaborated all last year, 2010, from early spring right up until October, and we wrote AD After Disclosure. And this is a book about how UFO secrecy really might end. I've often described it as a paradox, something that's impossible, but it's inevitable. How is it impossible, and how is it inevitable? How might that secret end? And then the real question, how is it just going to transform our world when it happens, and that's a when, not an if. How will it rock our world, change everything that we thought we knew about our world, and lots going to be changed. And figuring out that book, that every page of that book was a new adventure for both of us, I have to tell you. And how will it change our politics? How will it change our science, our spirituality and religion, our cultural elements and so forth? A lot of this really had not been explored previously by anyone, I think, in the UFO field. And so it was left to us to puzzle it out and make our mistakes along the way, but also, I think, make some fairly fearless predictions. I was very proud to have written that book. And when I say make our mistakes, I'm not admitting we made many at all or even any. I'm just saying when you predict the future, I don't think any of us is going to be gifted with omniscience, but we did our best. We really set about it like a think tank would to try to understand in practical terms how our society would be affected by disclosure.
It seems that we're getting more and more incredible UFO reports, Richard. Is it that my perception mind. Or is it happening?
Well, no, I think the perception's accurate, George. I mean, but keep in mind, you know, 50 years ago, for example, back in the early 60s or in the 70s, the UFO researchers who were very active at that time, say J. Allen Hynek, for example, he suspected in the 60s that of all the UFO reports that people submitted to Project Blue Book, which at the time was the official repository for public sightings, he said, look, for every sighting Blue Book gets, there's probably at least 10 that Blue Book isn't getting. And that was a very conservative estimate. So there were lots of sightings back then, too. And then, as now, I think most people just sat on it and they didn't really tell anyone one way or the other and so forth. But having said that, if you go to the National UFO Reporting Center on the web, run by Peter Davenport, mm-hmm. he gets, I think, more than 4,000 U.S. sightings a year. A year. That he publishes. He gets about 4 or 5 times that amount. So he's getting about 15 to 20,000 reports a year. He publishes 4,000 or so. So it's extraordinary. People are seeing things. And it's my opinion that the phenomenon has been hot and heavy forever, but I do think there's something about our point in time right now that's causing a great deal of interest by them, whoever them happen to be, in us. And then the other thing, of course, is I do believe some of these UFO sightings that people are seeing are our own secret black ops type programs. I do think there's quite a bit of that going on. So we're in a world where there's a great disconnect between what's officially supposed to be existing and what actually exists. And it seems to me that disconnect gets larger every year. So we're not supposed to have UFOs, and yet there's a zillions of them that people are seeing all the time. At some point, George, something's got to give, and this yeah. dam is going to break. And the truth is going to flood our worldview, and we're going to see things in a very, very new way, I believe.
Well, and you pointed out something here, Richard, which I find fascinating. There seems to be, you know, if these sightings are real, some kind of tremendous interest in us right now. Either they know something, and they're trying to let us know in their own little way, or they're monitoring us for a major reason, but something's happening.
Absolutely, absolutely. Personally, I've felt that what we're talking about is having to do with our nuclear technology. The modern phenomenon is very much in line with our exploitation of nuclear power. I don't think that that's an accident. The earliest UFO researchers did not think that was an accident either. People like Major Donald Kehoe openly speculated that perhaps it was our untapping of atomic power in 1945 that prompted heightened interest by these others. And it wasn't just Kehoe, but people speculating within the U.S. classified world as well. Some of the memos we have indicated this type of reasoning. And it makes sense. You know, tapping into nuclear energy is orders of magnitude beyond anything that we've done in our previous history. And maybe that's what gave them a little tap on the shoulder and heightened their longstanding interest in us to the point that we really started to notice them more than ever before. If that's not the reason, I would say then it's just our general technological trajectory might be enough to do it. I mean, the fact that we're getting into computers in the 40s and 50s, and it wouldn't be difficult for them to see that we were on the fast track. And really, we're about to leap into their world, as I put this a few times. Our own technology is exponentially increasing. Think about where we were as a society 100 years ago. We were still dominated by horses and wooden carts. And then we go from that to air flight, you know, airplanes and radios and all the types of transportation and communication. And we're now into an age of nanotech and soon to be intelligent computers and beyond. And so all of that within the space of about a century. We have transformed ourselves, and we're going to have the ability before very long to be dealing with these other beings, I think, in ways much more substantially than we can right now. We're going to have the tools at our disposal, I believe.
Even people, Richard, who would have been on the fence years ago, they're beginning to become believers. I've got a friend here in St. Louis. His name's Peter. I was talking with him about you tonight. And 5 years ago, would have laughed about this, UFOs and all that. Now, you know what? I think he's a believer. Why have people changed?
Well, we've interacted with this phenomenon now for, at least in an open way, more than 60 years. I think of us as a kind of, you know, in the quantum experiments where the observer, the very act of observing changes the thing that is being observed. In a way, that's us. It occurred to me. That is 60 years plus of having this phenomenon sort of out in the open now. They're observing us, and it's changing us. It's changing us in our military response. I am certain that we've developed technologies as a way to deal with them, and by recovering their technology, we've sort of increased and sped up our own development. But it's also changed us in our consciousness. Slowly, we as a civilization are starting to believe. I think that's what's happening. This sea change has happened. We see it in our popular culture. We see it in our movies and our TV shows. Not all of these are Hollywood/CIA inspirations to get us ready for the truth. I believe firmly that a lot of these are bottom-up manifestations. That is, the people themselves are forcing these changes. And we're seeing a gradual sea change in the global population vis-a-vis the topic of UFOs, and we are transforming as a result of this. So in other words, the observers, by being here, are changing us, that which is being observed, and that which is being observed is now observing them.
Have you seen the video, Richard, of the UFO over Fukushima in Japan? We've got it posted on our website.
Oh, you do? Yes. Is this the one that was from German television?
I think it might have been.
Originally? Yeah. It's this elongated white object.
Yes, that's it.
That's seen. Well, that's quite interesting. I've looked at this. It seems to me that I am not convinced that this is actually a UFO. I looked at it a long time, and if you notice, first of all, the German television article about it, a TV piece, excuse me, did not have any mention of a UFO. At least my German's rusty, but it didn't seem like that's what they were talking about at all. And the object does appear to move, but also if you look at it carefully, the camera angle moves during that whole section. So that, in other words, you can see this. You got the Fukushima, the plant right there, and then there's this white object that does appear to be moving across the screen. And now there's mountains there, and there's also I think that there are tracks. There's a train track in the distance. I don't know if that's a train, but I do see that object's moving in conjunction with the camera movement and the change of perspective. And now, I'm not pretending that I'm the final word on this, but My instinct is that this was not a UFO.
Okay. What about the dome in Jerusalem? That UFO. You've seen that
one. Oh, my God. Well, that's the one, of course, that that makes us all go running in terror. Any UFO researcher, at least for myself, I don't know. I've almost lost track of the numbers of videos that have happened of the Dome of the Rock over Jerusalem.
And different angles, too.
Absolutely. And I must say, now, there's a couple that are very confidently labeled as hoaxes, and I think that's exactly right. Although even the hoaxed ones are really good. For example, one with a bunch of tourists chatting, and they see this object come down. What's that? It's a UFO. Oh, my God. And then it takes off. Well, that image, it seems to me, has been very definitively shown to be a JPEG, the image itself, because there's no motion. There's nothing moving in there. And all of the lights seem identical to each other, except this moving thing, which was inserted into it. But if that's a hoax, it's disturbing to me because you've got all these people involved. I don't think this was taken from some random event. I don't know where it was put together. It was very well done. But the first two videos that were released about this, I still haven't seen any definitive discussion by anyone that lays these to rest. In other words, there's a guy holding up his cell phone camera, and he's being recorded by someone who's behind him. And those two videos were released, and they certainly are they're synchronized very perfectly with each other. And then there's a video of these Russian-Israeli students, I guess. The whole video is 5 minutes long, and the first 4 minutes, basically, they're just goofing around in their van. One guy's cutting up, telling jokes and all of this. But then the end of it, they get out and they record this as well from a different angle. Now, I don't speak the language they speak. I don't speak Israeli or Russian, but they certainly, it seemed quite compelling to me. And I'm just waiting. I'm waiting for someone to debunk these. The thing with all of these videos, and this is one of the real problems we have in our age now of instant, you know, YouTube videos being uploaded, is that what we need are independent witness verifications of these things.
Yes.
There are hundreds and hundreds, thousands of UFO videos on YouTube. It's incredible. I mean, even 5 years ago, I was not expecting anything like this. And suddenly we're deluged with videos, and many have been shown to be hoaxes over the years. I mean, my God, remember that brief, the Haitian UFO, or this object, really realistic-looking object flying over, and it was proven definitively to be a CGI. And now we've got the Dome of the Rock. What we need are independent witnesses out coming forth telling their story. We need people, feet-on-the-ground investigations, folks like the people at MUFON, the tried-and-true field investigators out there doing the research necessary to vet these cases and these witnesses. The Dome of the Rock case, I leave out as something that could be genuine, only because it would seem to be logical. If you've got a dramatic sighting, then there might be motivations for some group to throw cold water over it by throwing a couple of hoaxes out there, and that would sort of disable the case. And I'm not saying I know that that's happened, but I have to wonder. And so I think there's one of the witnesses who is publicly gone forward about his, seeing of the UFO, and he is, last I checked, trying to drum up more witnesses and get this case out. And I think, well, why not? Let's try to investigate it to the best.
Richard, when we come back, let's get into the FBI's vault. Some incredible stories here. We'll be back in a moment with Richard Dolan on Coast to Coast AM. For just pennies a day, the change in your pocket, you can become a Coast Insider, formerly Streamlink. Simply go to coasttocoastam.com and sign up for that and have some fun. Downloads, podcasting, past archives, special chats, you name it, and more goodies coming down the road. In a moment, we'll go back to Richard Dolan and find out why the FBI would release in its new vault incredible UFO stories. Why would they do that? Let's find out when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And we're with Richard Dolan. Richard, before we get into the what, let me ask you about the why. Why would the FBI release these new documents in what they call the vault?
Good question. Well, first of all, what they've released is nothing that we haven't seen before. So none of these are new documents. To my knowledge, everything has been out for ages and ages and ages. Most of them since the late 70s, since the Freedom of Information Act really got going, they have been available. The infamous one that people have been talking about for the last couple of weeks, the Guy Hotel FBI memo, is one of these. Mm-hmm. Dr. Bruce McAbee, the intrepid UFO researcher who's been doing this since long before I got started in the game, got the document, I believe, as early as 1977, and then it's been republished numerous times. I'm holding in my hands the book by William Steinman from the 1980s about the UFO crash at Aztec. Steinman has it reprinted in his book, and on and on. I wrote about it briefly in my first volume of history, UFOs and the National Security State, when that came out in 2000.
So you're convinced the document is pretty authentic.
It's absolutely genuine. There's no question about that. The thing that matters is what is in it, and how accurate is it, and what should we make of this document? I remember when I first encountered it, before I really knew any of the history behind it, I was startled as well. I've got it right here in front of me. I'd be happy to read it.
And Richard, I'd like to know why there were no follow-up documents on what seems to be one of the most incredible stories of mankind.
Well, indeed, we can talk about this. Particular document, it's an FBI office memorandum. I should emphasize, it was not even a secret document. It wasn't classified. It just was one of these documents that had been uncovered in the late 70s. But it was written March 22nd, 1950. So early on in the UFO history of all of this, and it's from Guy Hotel, H-O-T-T-E-L, I guess you would say Hotel, special agent in FBI, special agent out of D.C. And he's the subject of this memo is flying saucers information concerning. He writes, the following information was furnished to special agent blank, blacked out by, and then the informant is blacked out. He writes, an investigator for the Air Forces, remember the Air Forces used to be plural back during World War II. In 1950, it wasn't plural, but they still using the old terminology. So an investigator for the Air Forces stated that three so-called flying saucers had been recovered in New Mexico. They were described as being circular in shape with raised centers approximately 50 feet in diameter. Each one was occupied by three bodies of human shape, but only 3 feet tall, dressed in metallic cloth of a very fine texture. Each body was bandaged in a manner similar to the blackout suits used by speed flyers and test pilots. According to Mr. Blacked Out informant, the saucers were found in New Mexico due to the fact that the government has a very high-powered radar set up in that area, and it is believed the radar interferes with the controlling mechanism of the saucers. No further evaluation was attempted by Special Agent Blacked Out concerning the above. And that's it. That's the memo. So it's quite, a shocking sort of memo.
It was so nonchalant, though, Richard. If I were writing you a memo, if you were the head of the FBI,
right?
I mean, though it's authentic, I mean, I would elaborate a little bit more.
Yeah, I should mention it was to J. Edgar Hoover, to the director of the FBI. So thank you for gently reminding me that. Well, you'd think so, but the thing is, these guys, they're all government agents. And when you read these bureaucratic memos one after the next, I mean, no one gets too excited. Even in memos where some of the information is really deeply spectacular, the tone is pretty much
straight.
Same. That's just, I think, how they tend to be. The question is, what does this memo mean? Well, people immediately interpreted this as a reference to Roswell. You think New Mexico UFO crash, you think Roswell. But in fact, this memo does not relate to Roswell specifically at all. It's, if anything, it's relating to the event that some have maintained did take place at Aztec, New Mexico. Maybe the more casual followers of UFOs may not be aware, but if you looked into this topic in any for any length of time, you've come across the Aztec UFO crash as well, and that is said to have taken place in late March of 1948. So almost a year after Roswell took place, another UFO crash took place in northern New Mexico near the town of Aztec.
Well, so this could have been the three they're talking about.
Well, what I think is, now here's the thing about the Aztec crash. I mean, the very first UFO book that we have in America was written by a guy named Frank Scully, S-C-U-L-L-Y. Called Behind the Flying Saucers. And Scully was a magazine writer. He wasn't like a Washington-based national security writer. He wrote...
And he wasn't a Frank Edwards, right?
No. He wrote for a magazine, I think, called Variety. And he'd write like Hollywood pieces at times and other types of entertainment pieces. But he stumbled onto this story. He writes this book about the crash of a UFO that took place at Aztec. This was the very first American UFO book. It's really quite extraordinary. And it almost immediately, within a year or two, got demolished publicly in an article in by a guy named Bob Considine for Cosmopolitan magazine, if I'm not mistaken.
And Considine was also a syndicated columnist, I believe.
Yes. Exactly. And so Scully's book was demonstrated, at least at that time, to be the result of some informants who were just complete con men hoaxing him. And now it is true, there's a guy named Silas Newton who claimed to have had gotten the details about this case and gave a lecture at the University of Denver on March 8th, 1950, about the alleged crash of a UFO at Aztec. And so it's almost certain that this memo is a reference to the Silas Newton lecture.
And also, did you know also that Scully from the X-Files was named after that Frank Skelly?
Yeah. That was kind of a cool homage, I'd have to say.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And so the real question is, What this memo seems to be is it's a reference to this rumor, maybe based in truth, maybe not, about a UFO crash in Aztec, New Mexico. Now, the one thing about this, that even if this is relating to the Aztec crash, the details are still very different from what we've heard about the Aztec crash. In other words, there were not supposed to be three bodies from Aztec, as I've been reading about it, but many, many more, 16 or even more bodies recovered at Aztec. This memo here says only three. So there's information's not consistent, but it seems to be related to what happened relating to the Aztec story. The real question is, was there a crash at Aztec, New Mexico or not? And for the longest time, researchers, like Bruce McAbee in his book, The UFO FBI Connection, where McAbee talks about this memo, refers to the Aztec crash as just a hoax, like I think a lot of the researchers have done. But I am not actually 100% sure that that was a hoax case. There's, like Roswell, the Aztec crash has received its own investigation, not as detailed as the Roswell. Yeah. But there have been researchers, Bill Steinman back in the 80s, Wendell Stevens back in the 80s also interviewed people. Now, they claimed to have witnesses who had direct information about this. The difference and the problem is that, to my knowledge, none of these witnesses' names is known. And so, they've been open to the charge of, well, who are these people? We can't check out who they are. Unlike with Roswell, where you've got names galore, all these people, they can be reached and have been spoken to.
Right.
So not quite the same with Aztec. There's another researcher, a very fine man that I know, Scott Ramsey, who is, I believe, still doing work on the Aztec crash, and I believe that Scott will be putting out a book on this at some point. Scott, if you're listening, I don't mean to pressure you, but I have every bit of confidence in Scott. He's a very dedicated researcher. So I think the Aztec crash is one that might have something to it. And in fact, I wouldn't be inclined to dismiss it. Here's the real significance of the Hotel memo. It's just one example of rumors. If nothing else, there were rumors floating around that reached the military of crashed UFOs. I'm just not convinced that this is a complete, that the story is based in a hoax. But the memo itself is certainly not anything that is evidence of anything directly. It's just simply, you know, an informant telling one FBI agent about this claim, and that's about all that it is.
And do you think most of these memos almost were as if they take these for granted? It's almost as if it's an everyday occurrence, and they just kind of write it up.
Well, that's their job. Their job is not to editorialize or to tell their bosses what's their opinion about most. Mm-hmm. Their job is to report what comes their way, and it's the job of their bosses to make the decision. You know, one of the most spectacular memos of this type is a CIA memo from December of 1952. And, I mean, this one was written by the director of the CIA's scientific intelligence, H. Marshall Chadwell, who was writing to the director of the CIA, Walter Bettles Smith, in which he's saying to him, sightings of unknown objects at high altitudes near sensitive installations, and I'm paraphrasing this.
And that was also the Washington, D.C. flap time period.
Well, absolutely. And what he says is that these sightings near sensitive installations are of such nature that they are not attributable to natural phenomenon or known types of aerial vehicles. And he's saying something is going on which must have our immediate attention. So now that's deeply provocative. And you know, this is a bureaucracy, so you're not just going to say, boss, I think we're being invaded. But that's about as close as you're going to get. And that was a classified memo, CIA, and it's just from 2 years after this FBI memo. So there is no question that there are a number of these in which you've got analysts very soberly reporting extraordinary events. And that's just how it is. We're very lucky that we have any of these documents, George, because, I mean, frankly, most of these classified documents have not come down to us. I think many have been destroyed. The FBI itself has said that it's destroyed many of its classified documents relating to this topic. And how do we recover our history? Well, you can't recover your history if you don't have the documents. It is so important. And what's shocking to me to this day, of all the thousands of pages of UFO documents that we have now from our government, more than half of them, George, came from the Jimmy Carter years when the Freedom of Information Act was actually useful for researchers. In other words, over 30 years ago. And that was it, a four-year window, and we got more than half of the documents during that period of time, during the late 70s. That to me is disgraceful. Why can we not get anything out today? The Freedom of Information Act is not the user-friendly sort of act that it really needs to be.
Do you think they destroyed the documents, Richard, or they put them somewhere?
Well, I think many of them are intentionally destroyed. There certainly are a number of insider leaked, alleged allegations from people who have claimed to have seen sensitive documents about UFOs being destroyed. The government does regularly destroy its documents if for no other reason that you have to maintain control. I mean, think of an office where you're just getting paper file after paper file after paper file. Mm-hmm. You got to do something with it. Otherwise, you're going to be buried under this stuff. The amount of documents produced by our government is just unreal. Now, in an age of digitizing everything, the paper documents are being destroyed. And this really disturbs me, because if everything's going to be electronic, how the heck are researchers going to be able to get some of these things?
Well, you become a Gary McKinnon, then you get arrested.
Oh, yeah. That's right. So it's not clear to me how, as a society, we're going to be able to pry the government open in a way that we get open and free access to the UFO documents that I think we all deserve to see. I think the only way that's going to happen is when we force the government to do so, either through a maybe something like a new version of WikiLeaks is able to pry UFO documents out, or maybe I think I'm still holding out the likelihood that there will be a mass sighting in the future, but this time captured with much more advanced technology that mm-hmm. we'll all have available to us that might just force the issue.
Will we believe it when we see it, or will we say, ah, Project Bluebeam, it's a hologram, it's a false government flag?
Yeah, that's a good question. Don't know until it happens, of course. I do believe that there will be sightings that will occur, and my hunch is that those who argue for a, kind of a Bluebeam false flag scenario are going to be in a minority. I have a feeling that also that the Bluebeam scenario, I wrote an article about this a couple of months ago for one of my sites, afterdisclosure.com. I would tell people to check it out. In October of 2010, there was another ramp up, and there was supposed to be a Bluebeam event that was supposed to take place. And I thought, Bluebeam, what's going on? I did a lot of research on Project Bluebeam. I was personally persuaded that this was not a particularly credible theory. I'd be happy to chat with you about that. But the Bluebeam concept seemed to have originated in the 1990s by a French Canadian named Monast, Serge Monast, and he died in the mid-90s, late 90s. Hmm. And he argued that NASA was planning a global event, sort of like a religious thing in the way he formulated, that they were going to have a fake second coming of
Jesus.
Of Christ,
yeah.
In conjunction with an ET kind of event, and it was going to scare the hell out of people, and they were going to basically give over their power to the New World Order, as he understood it at the time. And it, you know, it didn't happen. It was predicted to happen before 2000. It didn't happen by 2000. And
not a bad theory.
Well, it could happen. Look, false flags happen. There are faked events that governments and that, and especially intelligence agencies, do.
That's right.
Manage. Look, I've talked about 9/11 in this matter, and we certainly know going back into the early 60s, the CIA had planned something that was called Operation North Woods. That, thank goodness, John F. Kennedy said, "No way, no how. We're not going to do this." But the plan was to create a terrorist event on U.S. soil, killing U.S. citizens and blaming it on Castro's Cuba so that we could justify an invasion. Guess what? This was cooked up out of the brains of CIA analysts and operatives in the early 60s, for goodness sake.
And they said, it'll work. It'll work.
That's right. And Kennedy said, this is not the America that I'm going to be leading. And really have to respect John F. Kennedy for that decision. But so we know that intelligence operations do, in fact, seek to create fake events. And by the way, remember a month after 9/11, the anthrax scare. Everyone remembers that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it turns out one guy at the FBI did his job and discovered 5 or 6 years later, it came out that that anthrax, which had been blamed on the Taliban or the Al-Qaeda network, no, that anthrax came out of Fort Detrick, Maryland. That was home of U.S. biological warfare. Well, that's some news. And so we know that there are lots of false flag things going on.
Richard, stay with us. More to come with you. Richard Dolan, our special guest. His website's linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We'll be right back.